Welcome to the Physics Teaching Podcast, a podcast for teachers of physics made by physics teachers.
Physics teachers like me, Robin Griffiths, a full-time teacher of physics from years 8 through to 13, although year 13 have left now.
And physics teachers like me, a Thomas WP, a part-time A-level mostly physics teacher still doing space with year 7, so much fun, and year 12, currently doing thermal physics. And we are joined by another special guest. Welcome to the podcast, YouTuber and physics teacher, Rachel Gray.
Hello.
So Rachel came to our attention because she has made some really nice, simple YouTube videos. And we're going to ask her about those in a minute. But first of all, Rachel, tell us a bit about yourself. Where in the country are you and what sort of school do you teach in?
I am just south of Oxford. And I teach in a state school. It's part of a very small academy trust. Yeah, it's kind of national average for free school meals.
Kind of like my sort of school. Yeah. And how many physics teachers in your school?
Currently, myself and one other.
Oh, ooh. You are rich in physics teachers having two.
Yeah, actually, having listened to the podcast, I realise how lucky I am. This is the first school I've worked in. It's kind of amazing how schools get by without specialists. And your last podcast, Jo, like, we need more people like her who are willing to step forward. I think a lot of people are scared and, I mean, I guess rightfully so, scared to teach out of specialism.
Yeah, we are taking on a PE teacher to be a science teacher next year in my department. But I know him pretty well from outside school. I think he'll be fine. And I'm trying to get him to be assigned as a physics teacher and get me to mentor him because I think he'd be brilliant. He's a real enthusiast. I think he'd be a blast. It's just, like Jo said, choosing physics and then running with it.
Yeah, definitely. And enthusiasm, I think, gets you quite a long way. Definitely in my first year of teaching, I think enthusiasm kind of carries you somewhat.
Well, you are a bit less self-conscious in a funny way when you start, aren't you? Because I think that's one great thing about teacher training is it does encourage you to take risks genuinely. The teacher training that I've seen, they do encourage people to have a go at things and see how they went. And I don't know, when I reflect back on my career, you kind of lose that a little bit as you go on because you maybe sort of slip into habits and things like that. I don't know if that's fair.
I think, so I did a skit and at my second placement, certainly, I felt like I could take a lot of risks because I would see the students less frequently. So if I took a risk that was awful or that really backfired, then I wouldn't have to see them again necessarily the next day.
Yeah, if you blow it with year 7, you've got to face them down for 5 years. Oh no, what have I done? Yeah.
So Rachel, let's talk about your YouTube videos because I'm very interested in this. I'm very techie. I've used OBS and I've used OpenBoard and I've used all sorts of stuff. And I saw your videos. And let's just play a little section from one now for the listener. And then we'll talk about how you make them.
The next graph I'm going to show you is a graph of the mass of a chocolate bar on the y-axis and time on the x-axis. So mass of the chocolate bar in kilograms on the y-axis and time on the x-axis. I'd like you to pause the video and see if you can work out what is happening. Tell me the story behind this graph. And then here again, we've got the mass decreases. So this must be another byte. Then we've got a period of time where the mass stays the same. Nothing is happening to the mass, but time is still going on. So they must be using that time to do some chewing of the lovely chocolate bar. Then here, this is a massive decrease in mass. So I'm going to assume that that is an extra large bite. They must be really getting into the chocolate bar at this point. And here we have again a time where the mass doesn't change. So this must be more chewing.
So there we heard you talking through eating a chocolate bar, lovely, simple slide you had. And it looked to me like PowerPoint. And you told me that the technology you're using is really, really, really simple. So do you want to just tell the lovely listener, how do you make your brilliant YouTube videos?
Yes, it is very low tech. I am not a techie person at all. And so it's really easy. So PowerPoint has an option to record over a slide, and you can do it per slide. So if you fluff up on one slide, you can just redo that without having to redo the entire thing. And yeah, it's just recording over the top of slides, and then you can export it as a video. So I export it as an MP4, and then made myself a shiny new YouTube channel and have started calling myself a YouTuber to the students. And then, yeah, just uploading them and telling students to go watch them. It's entertaining to see their reaction when I say I'm a YouTuber. Like, there are many famous YouTubers that students know, and it's kind of funny to claim that I'm one of them.
So if you were, let's say, dyed in the wool, you know, old physics teacher is a bit stuck in their ways. I can't think where I might find one of those anywhere handy. But in terms of YouTube and using it as a teaching tool, what would be a good way for people to sort of get going and start using YouTube and start using it as a teaching tool for that? And yeah, it may find a wider audience eventually, but it can be quite useful, I guess, for any teacher, can it?
Yeah, I think so. So obviously we all know teaching is like a crazy demanding job, and I feel like everything I do, I try to make it reusable. So obviously I'm making them at the moment because we can't teach students face to face. But the idea was to make them of a decent quality so that I could use them again. For example, like, let's say we go back to normal, but a student is off ill. It would be super handy to just say, go look at this video, because it's the exact same PowerPoint and the exact same worksheet that I'm going to give everyone else. So I honestly think that I don't do anything massively special. I think quite carefully about the explanations I give. And then, yeah, just talk like you're talking to a class.
So there's some gold dust in there, because I think two things you said there that really chimed with me were everything I do, I try to make it reusable. I think if we took that as a mantra, as a profession, we would solve so much of the workload issue that we face year in, year out. Just everything I do, I try to make it reusable. What great advice. And the other thing is, I think really carefully about the quality of my explanations, and I think that really comes across. So we'll post some links to your YouTube video in the show notes so that people can see this. But I think the bit where you were talking about meters per second and what meters per second means in one of your videos, really, because I tried to do that, but you just did it so patiently and so thoroughly and so well. It's almost like I challenge you to not get what speed is, having watched this. It's really, really well done. So thank you for that.
Thanks.
That's exactly my feeling when I was listening to it. It was so clear. And I wanted to ask you two things. I mean, I think you've answered one, which is, how much time do you spend thinking about the scripting, and how much time do you spend actually on the PowerPoint? Because again, your slides are very simple. I was wondering if it's one that's just been kicking around the school that was made in 1984, or did you finally craft this specially for that video?
So I guess, kind of going back to what I said about reusing stuff, the slides I have made, purposefully, they're very minimal to kind of reduce the cognitive load on students, like the idea that you can't really read and listen at the same time. So I don't have any or many words on my videos or on my slides when I'm teaching. So in terms of how much time it takes, I make the PowerPoint as if I was going to teach it in a classroom in normal times, because once I've done it, I want to reuse it. And then in terms of recording, I probably do spend maybe about an hour or two perfecting. It depends on the topic, but up to an hour or two perfecting what I want to say. And honestly, it's been really nice, because often when you're teaching four or five lessons a day, every day, you don't have time to think that clearly about an explanation. And with the best will in the world, it's never going to be, you know, I'm never going to have this much time again, probably. So it's been almost quite good professional development for me to sit down and think really clearly about what I want to say, and actually to be able to listen to it and then redo it if I want to. It's quite a gift. Like, you don't get to do that in a classroom. So maybe it takes between an hour and two to do the whole thing. But like I said, I think once it's done, hopefully it'll be useful for me for the rest of my career. So, and maybe someone else might find it useful. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. And it goes back to something Patrick Kapler said right at the start of this whole COVID thing. He said, how do you think the profession will change as a result of COVID? And I think it is things like this, where you have learned that you can make these videos and they will be useful for the kids. I have learned to make videos. Unlike you, I wore a shirt of mine. I've been roundly abused for it. You managed to hide behind yours, and I don't think it loses anything for that. I spent hours working out to put my face on it, which I wasn't very happy about. But you just have done it so simply and beautifully, and it just I think what really shines through is that you have thought carefully about how to deliver it. I think that is so powerful. I think that's hard. I think you've managed it super, super well.
Thank you. I mean, I would say that for every kind of couple of videos that I get students to watch, I do a live lesson on like Google Meet, just to kind of summarize and answer questions that they have, which I think, you know, there's been a bit of research that says that students are suffering because of the lack of their teachers' interaction. So hopefully that bit kind of makes up for the behind the screens YouTube videos.
No, absolutely. And I was going to ask you, when you or if we return to normality in September, do you have the wherewithal to use these videos in your regular lessons, or will it literally just be for kids who are catching up and are missing lessons?
I don't think I would use them in my lesson, but I think I would use them for interventions, for low attenders. Yeah, I think they do have a place, but probably I would cringe so much if I had to stand there whilst my YouTube video was playing.
Well, no, because I was just wondering if perhaps a model would be that, you know, that's playing and you're going around sort of giving the individual help and the prompts and the checks where it's needed. And if that might be a model that might work, I didn't know. It's just something occurred to me when I was doing all this, was I was thinking, oh, next year, you know, if I've got the kids all on their computers and they're all actually going through this lesson, I can be going around and answering questions, helping them out, doing that sort of thing, and almost treat the video like an activity. Not all the time, but just every now and again to change the pace, change the tone, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think you could do. I also think that it possibly could be used for cover lessons, which are like, you know, renowned for being difficult to plan and difficult to deliver by cover teachers.
It sort of begs the question, it gets us into a realm, I guess, where we start to think about, you know, would it be good, you know, if you had a set of these kind of professionally produced, and I know Alam Shahar, friend of the podcast, Alam Shahar, has talked about this in the past. You know, if you have a set of professionally produced demos, lesson elements, bits and pieces, experiments, these kinds of things that are sort of professionally produced and carefully directed and all the rest of it, that can be a really powerful teaching tool. But somehow it does kind of seem to shortcut the teacher out of things. So I never quite know where I stand on that. I don't know about you.
I think I enjoy standing at the front and talking too much to like to play them. I absolutely love talking, I guess, to students, but also about physics to students. Yeah, I think there's a nice bit of being not polished when you're talking to students. Like I really enjoy it. So I don't think I would replace myself with my videos.
Sure. No, that makes perfect sense to me. And that kind of answers the question, which is great. So thank you for that.
I'm not sure I'd put my ugly mug up on the board. Although I have learned from you, because my A-level was struggling with one of the questions I set for homework, and I just pinged out a video. I didn't use PowerPoint, but I used OpenBoard and just record it and send that their way. Would I use that again? I'm just not organized enough to remember I've done it. I'll forget. I need some sort of document management system that tells me that the question 8 of the homework, which is on specific heat capacity and specific latent heat, has a video explanation. I'm just not organized enough to remember that.
Yeah, this is something I'm really trying to work on, because the amount of times I've thought to myself, I definitely made this, but I've got like 5 folders that all say physics, and you know, like, so it's definitely one of my goals, I guess, personal goals, is to become more organized. And it's this whole thing of making it reusable and not wasting my time doing things that I've done before.
Yeah, it's funny, actually. It's one of the things I think, actually, and it's a subtlety about physics. And you've got a colleague who you work with, but I remember the big school that Thomas and I worked at together, they had a biology department of about, I don't know, how many were there, Thomas? About 8, 10 of them?
Eight or ten, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. And of course, because there were so many, that they were always very careful about making sure that they kept their resources in order and that they, you know, shared all their stuff, or they did all that. When it's one or two of you, you tend to get a bit, not lazy is the wrong word, but you know, you just, the benefits of sharing and collaborating are not as clear for you as it would be when you've got a team of 8 all working on the same thing. So it's kind of tends to be that the physics is a bit disorganized and not as well put together. It's certainly something we're trying to get a handle on at our school this year.
I make so few resources like PowerPoints. I hardly ever use PowerPoint. But I do remember, and partly that's because years ago, I made the definitive best all-time PowerPoint of circular motion and simple harmonic motion. And I had an animated slide and the ball going around the circle and all the angles being drawn out and the explanation. Can I find that 10 years later? No, I cannot. Have I looked for it? Yes, I have. I have a very, very good backing up system. I'm really good at backing up. I cannot find it anywhere. I've just got to do better. I was thinking actually maybe that resources site I set up, which I keep adding things to, maybe that's, you know, the document management system for this. So I could put my little YouTube video in there for thermal physics and Boyle's law, and maybe put my little video of the explanation of how to do this question in there. But it's just time, isn't it? And remembering you've done that.
Yeah, I definitely think it's one of those things that if you don't do it as soon as you've made the resource, you're never going to do it. But I mean, going back to what you said about just working with one other person, it's interesting. We spend a lot of time just saying, like emailing each other, being like, hey, have you got this thing? And then pinging it over and never actually saving it in a shared place. But we've both got a copy. But actually during lockdown, this is another thing. We've completely reordered the way that we teach physics from year 7 to year 13, which has been a massive job. But we've actually made a joint Google folder and we've actually started to put things in folders, and it's looking really good actually.
That is another thing that will change as a result of this, because we're a team school and we have moved everything online. We had already just started before this, but we have now, the physics department, the two of us have really started trying to communicate and collaborate. So we're doing a similar thing. And again, that's come out of COVID, this better cooperation.
Yeah, in a really weird way, I think there are some silver linings, I guess. Like, we've seen people being nice to each other. And I think, like, for work, genuinely, I've had so much time to think about what I do and the way I teach things, that I'm sure that the way, you know, in the following years, I'm going to teach better lessons. It's interesting.
Yeah, well, I was hoping that, because I don't know whether you're the same, but in my school, a lot of what I would call the kind of the chaff that goes with teaching has disappeared with the face-to-face teaching. So, for example, there's a lot less pastoral stuff going on, not none, but a lot less. We used to have these sort of extracurricular activities that are now not happening because, again, it's deemed that if we were to be doing those, they'd be online and that would just increase the screen time for the kids, and they really don't need any more screen time and all this sort of thing. So a lot of the thing that are the bits around, if you like, teaching your subject, which I guess it should be fairly obvious to somebody who does the physics teaching podcast, for me that's a really important part of it. The subject I teach is the most important part to me. That's all disappeared, and that's cleared the horizon a little bit in terms of being able to work on this. I don't know, have you found the same, Rachel, or is it?
To an extent, I guess a lot of my time, basically I'm not exhausted or not as exhausted when I finish work, in air quotes, at like 5. And so the evening I can spend remaking things and reading things and thinking. During the day, I think I still do quite a lot of pastoral stuff. And the extracurricular bits, I have tried to keep sending students interesting things to read. So I'd really like to give a shout out to Oxford University Outreach Department, because they've been amazing. They've been sending like really interesting resources that we can forward on to students. And even there's like at the moment there's a magnetism poster competition going on. And I agree that it's increasing their screen time. However, I imagine a percentage of them would be going from a laptop or a phone onto a TV or an Xbox or other similar devices. So it's been really nice, and some of them have engaged really well with it. And I think it's nice that I've been able to continue that even remotely.
That's an excellent point. An excellent point. Yes, it's not exactly like they're going to sit there and go, oh, I've been on the screen all day, I won't go on the Xbox or whatever now. Yeah, very, very, yes, well put. And great to hear about Oxford University. That's one I've made a note to go and have a quick squirrel after the podcast tonight. And, of course, we'll put a link in the show notes as well.
I just wanted to pick up what you were saying about thinking about it and teaching it better. I mean, I have thought about it much more than I would normally. Normally, I just busk my way through. And there is evidence. The kids in the materials test that I've just given which I did online. They had a 2-hour slot. It was the exact same test that I normally give them that I made webified. They did incredibly well. I mean, much better, much like they were all about 2 grades better than normal. So either they had devolved some incredible cheating system in the 2-hour window I gave them for an hour test, or they have learned to study and we've taught it better. Interestingly, the two of the flakier ones have given up physics through this process, but I think they would have given up anyway next year. But the other 12 have really committed, and it was startling how good their results were.
What was the format of your test? How did you do it?
We did it in Microsoft Forms. So Microsoft Forms is like Google Forms, very similar. So you can have a question, you can have an image. But I don't know if Google Forms does this because we're a Microsoft shop here. You can restrict the answer to a number. That's very, very useful. And it just takes a little bit of thought about how to design the test. The one thing they couldn't do was draw a graph. So I just drew it for them and took those points off the test. But they still had to do the gradient from the diagram I gave them. They still had to answer the questions. And what I did was I had the question and the marks for it, for the answer. And then the question following was explain in words how you went about answering this. And then if they got a terrible answer, they could still get working points for saying I did this and I got this number and I did this and I got this number and this is how I got the answer. So I still felt I was able to give them working marks as well.
Interesting. Do you think you'll reuse that?
Definitely. Definitely. We really do think that there is mileage in using online tests with them because it does all the marking for you. It makes the marking a lot easier because all the numbers are marked automatically and then you can just mark question two for all of them on one page. So it is quicker.
And I guess you could get them to do it at home, which would free up a lesson or contact time with them.
Yeah, absolutely. Or as you say, cover lesson. Yeah, that sort of thing. Yeah, it's everything's up in the air now, isn't it? And we are learning so much. It's extraordinary what teachers have achieved in this short period, really. I mean, the skills that people have developed when they haven't got to be running around, running assemblies and being a form teacher and dealing with fights in the corridor. Like you were saying earlier, it's amazing what happens when teachers have time to actually do what they joined the profession for.
Yeah.
I am always singularly amazed at the teaching profession as a whole, because for a group of individuals who can be sort of quite harsh on each other, the way they front up to this. I mean, what did we have in terms of switching to teaching online? We got something like a weekend's notice to do this, and everybody sort of went, okay then, and it worked. You know, it happened. It happened the following week. And despite, you know, various people and Lord Adonis with his silly tweet about, you know, people not doing the jobs properly and all this sort of stuff, but fundamentally it was quite remarkable. And having worked in jobs outside of teaching, I know that there's no way that a seismic shift in like that in any other walk of life would have been handled so quietly and efficiently and effectively as the teaching profession. So all you folk who are listening to this now, give yourself a pat on the back. It's a job well done.
Brilliant. We should move on, because I've been meaning to mention this. We've had some contacts from the listener. The listener is contact us a couple of times. We had a slightly odd one, Robin, didn't we, from someone. I've just bought a very old Griffin and George 3-centimeter wave transmitter without the receiver or operating manual or technical data, and be grateful if you could help. So off you go, Robin. I'll let you. Oh, should we ask Rachel to help with the Griffin and George 3-centimeter?
Yeah.
Rachel, what advice would you give?
I'm pretty sure that before we started recording, I said, no difficult questions, please.
I'll leave it to Robin then. Robin can solve that one.
Yeah, actually, I do know a man. There's a guy at the Institute of Physics called Robert Burke who I've never known to be caught out yet on a piece of equipment. He seems to know every single piece of physics equipment that's ever been produced. So if you get in touch with Robert, he will send him a few pictures of the equipment. I'm sure, I'll bet you, he will have something sensible to say, certainly more sensible than I have to say.
That's the best I could do was go on to the PTNC news group. There's a lot of knowledgeable people on there who will have an opinion, that's for sure.
Yes. Yeah, talk physics as well, of course.
Yeah, and talking of equipment, we have had, Robin, we haven't trailed this on the podcast for a long time, but we have a WhatsApp or Telegram where you can leave a voice memo. And guess what, Robin?
You're joking.
We have had a voice memo from a friend of the podcast who has some exciting news, and I'm going to play it to you now.
I'm Jonathan Short, a recently qualified physics teacher, and I just had some very exciting news that my school has been awarded a generous grant from the fantastic Wolfson Foundation to purchase physics equipment. We have approximately £50,000 to spend to improve our teaching from Key Stage 3 through to Key Stage 5. We're a young school and we aren't very well equipped, and some of the kit that was purchased when the school was started a few years ago has frankly not aged very well. So it's really important to us to do a good job spending this money. We'd love advice from podcast listeners on what we should buy. We want to know whether the Unilab power supply is the best and which light gate timer setup we should go for. Who makes the best wave tank? And is it sensible to have a whole class set of light gates, timers, ramps, trolleys, etc., and more wave tanks for that matter, to do the GCSE required practicals? Or is a good demo better? We want to know how many oscilloscopes we should buy and which ones. Who makes the best data loggers? And would we actually use data loggers for that matter? And what are the one-off bits of kit we ought to have? We'd like to buy an electron diffraction tube, a microwave source and detector, a national grid simulator, and lots more. But we'd like to hear from other physics teachers what demonstration kit do people recommend and actually use, and what just sits in the prep room cupboard.
So that's Jonathan Shaw, who I know has made his own light gates using Arduino. So he, if anyone deserves to spend a lot of money on physics equipment, it's Jonathan. So we are putting out the clarion call to the listener to share with us the best equipment that you can't live without. He mentions Teltron tubes there. I think I definitely want the electron diffraction. I definitely want a fine beam. I definitely want a Maltese cross. Our Maltese cross died. I was not on hand, and I took it out of the box, and it was burnt to a cinder. So I don't know what happened there. So what about you two? I trailed this with you a bit earlier today, but is there any equipment you can't live without, Rachel?
So I have to confess that I cheated slightly. I went this afternoon. I cycled around to the physics technician's house and had a very socially distant chat with her, because she's lovely, but also because she knows everything about what you need in a physics prep room. And basically her overall message was spend as much as you can afford on stuff, because if it's cheaper, then students will break it. And so that was her like first point of advice. But with light gates, actually, we have just bought B-Spy V light gates. I don't know if that means anything to you. They're new and very easy to use. So I'd recommend those B-Spy V light gates. Then I guess things that are really important, things like trolleys are used for everything, and pulleys, I think it's worth getting a decent quality pulley, and multimeters as well. That's what I came up with.
What about you, Robin?
Yes, I mean, to be honest, I hate to be boring, but I do think the circuit equipment is really important. I think Rachel's point, you mentioned multimeters, and I think those are very useful because they're very cheap and easy to use to an extent. But I do worry about the cognitive load of those, particularly with the kids who struggle a bit with the concepts of electricity. So I would have some separate ammeters and voltmeters as well, just to make sure that you can do that with the younger kids and with the kids who struggle to understand the difference between amps and volts, and multimeters take a bit of getting used to. So fine for A-level, fine for the bright kids. Yeah, agreed on the Teltron tubes. I think those are fabulous. I probably want, it's difficult actually, I was thinking maybe a Geiger counter.
Yeah, you'd have to, if you going to have sources, you've got to have a decent GM tube. We had a cheaper GM tube, and as the RPS, the radiation protection supervisor, I think that's, is that the right thing, it wasn't sensitive enough, and the school had to buy a new one, and we got it out of the health and safety budget, not out of the physics budget. So that was a result.
There you go. Well, if you can wangle that, that's great. But I have to say, another thing just occurred to me on this is the Wharton Foundation giving $50,000 to a school to buy physics equipment. Isn't that, that's a fabulous thing. I'm sure there's lots of heads of physics' ears perked up at that one. We need to sort of grab around a bit more. Maybe we can get someone from the Wharton Foundation on the podcast at some stage in the future to talk about what they do.
Yes, I'd not heard of it. It's a lot of money, isn't it? We could do with that. I mean, our equipment's pretty old and jaded and mismatched, definitely mismatched. I hear what you're saying about electrical equipment. I would definitely buy pre-made leads. I don't know about you, but again, the more you spend on the leads, the better. I've been at a couple of schools where they handmade, they bought the ends and they bought the leads and they made their own. They're just not robust enough. They just don't last. And then the technician ends up with a stack of leads to resolder. But if you buy them, they just last a lot better.
Yeah, and I think that goes to your technician's point, doesn't it, Rachel, of buying the best kit you can?
Definitely.
So I guess we should throw this open to you, dear listener. If you have any ideas, I can't believe I'm going to ask this. He's going to say, if you have any ideas on how to spend £50,000 on physics equipment, I'm sure you do. Please do get in touch with the podcast. You can tweet us at physicstp.
You can email us contact@thephysicsteachingpodcast.com.
There's Instagram, physics_teaching_podcast.
And there actually is now a contact form on nearly every page of the website. I realized yesterday that there wasn't one on any of the podcast pages since I changed over to the new podcast system. And now there's one on every podcast page, apart from last season, where there's two for the price of one. They all work. You can also leave us a voice memo on WhatsApp or Telegram. The number is in our Twitter bio. So we talked about practicals there from Jonathan Shaw. You must have known this was coming, Rachel. Maybe not, but do you have a practical memoriam? The practical, not on your gravestone. I know Robin doesn't like this segment. A practical that you would like to be remembered for. You know, when you retire, your kids will go, oh, Miss Gray, she was wonderful. We used to do this. What is that thing you want them to talk about?
Well, I do enjoy standing on a skateboard and throwing a ball in the opposite direction to which I then travel. That's quite, the idea of me skateboarding is something very alien to them. I think I personify quite a nerdy physics teacher quite well. So maybe that's what I'll be remembered by.
You're amongst friends here.
Is that right?
You're definitely amongst friends here. Well, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast, Rachel. Well done for your videos. I think they're super, and I think people should go and have a look at them. Use them and learn from them. I think the way you do them is lovely. So thank you very much for your time.
No, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
And thank you very much, Robin.
Thanks, Thomas.
Thank you for listening to the Physics Teaching Podcast, and special thanks this week to Rachel Gray. The podcast is presented by Robin Griffiths and me, Thomas WP, and produced and edited by me, Thomas WP. Don't forget to send in your ideas for how Jonathan Shaw can spend his £50,000. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you next week.